I don't know why it is, but in this day and age, it seems that nearly every second or third child has some sort of an allergy, in particular, a nut allergy. When I went to school, there was never a note that came home to your mum or dad saying, please don't bring nut products to school. But now every school, just about every school, has a ban on all nut products. Where did this come from? Why is it so, as Professor Sumner Miller would have said? According to the latest UK research, parents should be introducing their children to peanut products from as young as 4 months, and that would help them prevent developing allergies. This is according to the experts. The number of people suffering allergic reactions to peanuts has risen threefold in recent decades. And in severe cases, the consequences can actually be deadly. About 1 in 50 children are now affected, leading to a lifetime of worries about ingredients in their food. But these UK researchers have discovered a window of opportunity between the ages of 4 and 6 months, which they say is the best time to start introducing babies to peanuts. And they say, in doing so, it could reduce peanut allergy incidences by as much as 77%. All of this research comes from the King's College at London and the University of Southampton. I thought we'd talk about this and a few other medical issues that we need to talk about with the No BS doctor, Dr. Philip Norrie. He's on the phone right now. Hello, Dr. Phil.
Hi, how are you?
Doc, when you and I went to school, there was no such thing as a nut allergy. None of us had notes come back to our parents saying, don't bring nut products to school. But now every school has a ban on them. Where did this come from?
Well, there's several factors. Number one, we're more aware of allergies and more aware of particularly nut allergies, whereas before we sort of wallowed in our ignorance. And so if a kid had an asthma attack or had a rash, we put it down to other things and not necessarily a nut allergy. The other thing is our diets become more sophisticated, so we've got more nuts available. I mean, in the good old days, it was just peanuts. Now we've got cashews and pistachios and macadamias and walnuts, you name it, we've got it. So that's broadened the base that you can have allergies to because we've got more exposure to more different nuts.
Have we somehow, in a laboratory somewhere, have we modified our food? Have we mucked around with nature over the years?
Not really. I think basically we've just become more aware. It's like people with cancer. We've got more cancer people because the population's getting older, but people are more aware. So they, in the good old days, you just have a lump and die. Now they have a lump and want to find out what the lump is, and it's usually cancer or something.
So it's education.
It's education, yes.
Yeah. So what do you make of this study out of the UK? Introducing incrementally small amounts of peanut products to young kids so that they can develop a resistance. It makes sense, doesn't it?
Yeah, well, for the first 6 months, every child relies on its mother's antibodies and its mother's immune system, which comes across to them through the placenta. So for the first 6 months, they're protected by their mother's antibodies and immune system. And then after 6 months, they've got to do their own thing and fly solo. So it's the perfect opportunity to start giving small doses of smooth. You don't have to have the crunchy peanut butter. You just have the smooth peanut butter. And it's like desensitizing. You know, we give people small doses of whatever they're allergic to and then gradually build up the dosage so they can eventually be exposed to a full-blown exposure. So it's basically desensitizing, and at the right time when they've still got some of the remnants of their mother's immune system working for them.
It makes sense. Anyway, that's good news for young mothers. Look, I wanted to talk to you about the NRL and the AFL concussion protocol. I know you would have been watching this with great interest and probably not recently. Knowing you, you've probably been concerned about concussion in contact sports for many, many years now. So now we have the NRL implementing a mandatory 11-day break for any concussed player, and there's debate as to whether or not that's long enough. Some people are saying it should be 2 weeks, 14 days. And the AFL has returned to play protocols. It allows players to return after spending a minimum of 12 days on the sidelines if they receive medical clearance. Do you reckon, number one, I'm keen to hear your opinion on this, but is this because the AFL and the NRL are genuinely concerned about the health of the players, or are they just shit scared about being sued?
Both. I mean, the simple thing is to get the person to have a functional MRI before they're allowed to return, okay? Because everybody is different. Mm. Some people have got thicker heads and can protect their brain better. Some people get a worse injury and some people get a lesser injury, but they're both referred to as concussion injuries. Mm. The bottom line is, as far as I'm concerned, before you can go back and play, you should have an MRI showing that your brain's back to normal. Okay, so that takes into account how bad the initial injury was, because as I said, you're using the same tarring this with the same brush, a bad head injury and concussion versus a mild one.
Can you explain, Dr. Norrie, what concussion is as basically as you can?
Okay, when you get hit in the head, whether it be in a car accident or playing football, your brain does what we do call a contre coup injury. The brain goes forward and hits the skull, then it goes backwards and hits the skull again. So you basically get two points of impact where the brain gets hit, and therefore it's going to be bruised. Mm-hmm. And if badly hit, it'll be bleeding. So you can get what we call a subdural hemorrhage, something like that. And then you also get edema of the brain or swelling of the brain, so that part of the brain doesn't work properly. Mm. And depending upon which part of the brain is being hit, so you'll have different symptoms. And if you're really badly concussed, you know, you'll be knocked out.
Yeah. So do you think helmets or headgear would help prevent concussion? Because I've been told by other experts that, no, the helmets don't stop the brain from sloshing around inside the skull.
Yeah, well, that's the contre coup thing I was talking about.
Yeah.
You can have as many helmets as you like. When it hits, it's the brain, the soft tissue brain inside the skull, inside the box, going bouncing forward, hitting the front, and then bouncing backwards, hitting the back. So it hits in two areas, and it doesn't matter if you've got a helmet on. What happens if you've got a helmet on is you usually become more aggressive and cause
more
greater
confident
damage. Yeah, you're more confident and you're not going to hit your head, and therefore you become more aggressive and cause a greater injury.
In the United States, in gridiron, they often say that these helmets that they wear, they make them, as you say, more confident, more aggressive, and they actually use their heads as battering rams.
Battering rams, which makes the brain even worse, right?
Yeah. So is 11 days long enough?
Well, that's why I said you can't have a mandatory time, because 11 days might be all right for a minor injury where you need 28 days or a month for a major head injury. And the only way to differentiate between the two is to have an MRI and see what the brain's doing. Yeah. Is it swollen? Is it bleeding? Does it have micro hemorrhages? Blah, 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 you know?
Yeah. And do you agree that whoever decides, when a player looks as though they may have suffered a concussion on a playing field, that doctor cannot be a team doctor. It has to be an independent doctor, doesn't it?
Yeah, you'd have to have an independent doctor, and you're better off erring on the side of caution. We only get one brain, and you want to look after it, right? And we seem to spend our lifetime buggering them up by drinking too much or smoking too much and having strokes and things. So you've only got one brain, look after it. And yes, it should be an independent doctor making the assessment. And if in doubt, then just basically assume the worst. You know, it's the old expression, hope for the best and prepare for the worst.
I couldn't believe what Ricky Stewart said 4 weeks ago, 3 weeks ago, pardon me, when one of his two players actually were taken away from the game, one of them with a suspected concussion. And it was one of his key players. It was at a crucial part of the game. And Ricky Stewart was asked, I want you to hear this, because I was incredulous when I heard this. Just remember, Ricky Stewart isn't a doctor. He's a football coach. And he was asked about his key player being taken off and his thoughts on club doctors and club medical staff versus independent doctors. Dr. Norrie, have a listen to this.
Well, the RLPA, the NRL, they don't trust coaches, mate. Do you think I'd let a player play if he had a concussion or he's concussed? And I don't just trust the player's comments when he comes to the sideline in regards to that. But when he's down, getting his leg attended to, and I ask him, and his eyes, there was no fatigue and there was no pain in his eyes in regards to when he came off, he was very coherent. That didn't help us in that game. That's why I talk about toughness. And there was two of them. Yep, okay, Corey might have had the HIA. We had to serve two players there in very important positions for 30 minutes in that game.
So according to coach Ricky Stewart, his player didn't have pain in his eyes and didn't seem concussed. That was the coach's diagnosis.
Yeah, well, I mean, he's obviously not a doctor and he should pull his head in and listen to what the experts say. And that's the trouble. You've got to have an independent person. I mean, my thoughts, I'll give you my prediction of what's going to happen in the future with contact sports. Contact sports will go out and we'll all be playing soccer, okay? And there's three reasons for that. Number one, the mother's influence, okay? Mothers don't want their little children to have head injuries and end up demented, right? Mm-hmm. Number two, once the players realise that, you know, they could get this concussion syndrome and cerebellar trauma syndrome and all that and end up demented, then the players aren't going to be wrapped in playing contact sports because they'll want some other sport where they don't get their head hammered. But the final thing that's, I reckon, is going to put the nail in the coffin for contact sports is the insurance companies, right?
Yeah.
What insurance company is going to insure players in the future when they know they're going to get a class action from all the demented players' wives wanting millions and millions of dollars in compensation? No insurance company could survive.
Exactly. But let me ask you this. We're talking about rugby league and AFL, but what about boxing, kickboxing, those very, very violent martial arts? You know, you've seen them, UFC. The ultimate result is a knockout, Dr. Norrie. You can win a boxing match on points, but the ultimate result is a knockout, which is concussion. Are you amazed that a sport where the ultimate result is knocking your opponent out is still allowed to go on?
I'm flabbergasted. I mean, you know, look at Muhammad Ali. You know, they tried to pass that off as Parkinson's disease.
So are there going to be class actions down the track with UFC fighters and boxers?
Yeah, why not? Why not? Because they're allowed to bash each other's brains in and then become unconscious and then the other person wins. But the end result is they get damage to the brain, dementia, and it won't be the players suing because the players, you know, like the game. And when you're demented, you can't sue. It'll be the wives suing because they'll want their husbands to be compensated because their husband's not going to be working and they're going to be looking after their husband in their old age while they're demented.
There are junior rugby league codes where they are banning tackling now and it's become touch football and kids are leaving those competitions and looking for competitions where they can tackle like their heroes. If we ban tackling with junior football, see, some experts are arguing that the kids aren't being told how to tackle properly and that their technique is wrong. Oh, but what's next? Do we ban fast bowling in cricket?
Well, fast bowling in cricket, every fast bowler ends up retiring because they've got fractures of their lumbar spine or they've done their shoulder in. All sports people end up retiring because of some major injury. It's just like carpenters, roof tilers, bricklayers, builders, concreters, they all, by the time they're mid-40s, their backs are gone and their knees. So basically it's in sport, it's mainly knees, and if you're a fast bowler, it's your shoulder and your lower lumbar spine.
Yeah, I know, but I'm talking about the batsman at the receiving end of a fast ball from a bowler. It's a rock-hard missile that they're throwing. And we saw what happened to Philip Hughes, and we've seen head injuries, even though helmets are worn. I just wonder if you're going to ban tackling in junior rugby league, are they soon going to ban fast bowling in junior cricket? Anyway, it's something.
Yes,
yes, you're probably right. Dr. Philip Norrie, always educational, interesting talking to you. Thank you so much for your time. I know you're very busy. How's life?
I'm busy, hectic, looking forward to a hectic winter. But I'm going, I'm having a break. I'm going to go to a wine, the Academy of Wine Business Research Conference in Canada to talk about my resveratrol enhanced wine on the international stage. So we'll see how that goes.
Yeah, Dr. Phil is also known as the wine doctor, and he talks about resveratrol, which is part of the makeup of the skin of dark grapes, and it's widely regarded as an anti-aging agent. And he's written books about it. He's, just look him up, The Wine Doctor, and you'll see Dr. Philip Norrie. We'll talk more about that in down the track when you get back from Canada. Always good to talk to you, Doc. Yeah. Take care.
May I suggest that you talk to some representative of the insurance industry and see what the insurance industry
it's a very good idea.
Thinks about the potential of a class action where they've got to pay out billions of dollars in compensation. So get their opinion, see what they think.
It's a really good idea. I will. I'll do that. Good to talk.
Okay.
Take care.
Ciao. Bye.
Dr. Philip Norrie.